Ed, good morning to you.
Good morning and salutations to you, Jared.
Good morning and salutations. It's a cold, rainy day. I also want to say happy autumn. Today's the first day of autumn, as we record.
I have to say, and I know we've had this question multiple times probably in the pod. That's my favorite season, man. Autumn.
Your favorite is because my birthday is in autumn. Is that
it's
why?
Because it's autumn, and I know Prince scheduled the 1989 release to be on your birthday, which I thought was very mindful of him. So it's your birthday. It's always a big party. We party all of October.
Yeah, that's true.
And if you're living in the northeast of the world. No, it's a little early here, guys. This is going to be a rough one. Northeast of North America. It's such a beautiful time of the year with the leaves changing and cooler temperatures and all that stuff.
There's lots of things that I associate with the fall that I really like. I liked going back to school as a kid, going back to school. Mm-hmm. It's baseball playoff time.
It's true.
College football has started.
Yep.
Bands go on their fall tours, and I'm a big fan of this weather wherein you could you and I both right now have hoodies on.
Yeah.
But you could also maybe still wear shorts someday.
Absolutely. Do a little hayride, sit around a fire, do that stuff.
And can I talk about my hoodie for a second? We haven't done a what are you wearing feature in a while.
What's that? So guys, Jared's showing me, can you explain those designs there that you're showing me?
Yeah, so this symbol, so this one is supposed to be an I.
Okay.
The letter I.
It's like a big dot, it almost looks like a sun setting over a tree, like a Christmas tree.
It sort of does, yeah. And then this is supposed to be I/O.
Uh-huh.
I'm wearing this because this is my... This is me being super bougie. This is my Gabriel European tour hoodie.
European tour.
Yeah. So on the back, it only has all the European dates. And I have to say, I know that's lame. It makes me feel kind of cool. So just have the European tour dates on the back.
I love you being upfront about all that. I think that's
I'm just going to be honest about it. I'm like, I feel cool wearing my European tour hoodie. Yeah.
And I'm sorry. I don't know why it just popped in my head. I don't think we mentioned this on the first podcast, but I just want to give a shout out that you were on that other podcast. Was it Turn It to 11? Is that what it's called?
Yeah. Thank you for mentioning that. We didn't. Yeah. So there's this great podcast, folks. We highly recommend it. It's called This One Goes to 11.
There you go.
With some friends of ours. Their show is they invite guests on who have nominated an album that the guest deems as being perfect in some way. In other words, it doesn't just go to a 10, it's an 11. And then they ask you to come on and talk about the album, evaluate the album, and explain why you feel that way. So I was very fortunate. They asked me to be a guest. And
which Prince album did you pick?
I picked. Yeah, exactly. Well, here, Ed, as you know, the process is like you send them some ideas and then they pick the one. And Ed's going to be a guest in the future, where he's going to in the near future, where he's going to be talking about Sign of the Times. Because we can see the future. I was a guest talking about the rise and fall of Ziggy Stardust and the Spiders from Mars, which, as all of our listeners know, is near and dear to my heart.
Yes.
And Ed, I'll give you a little prep. I'll soften the ground for you here. When you go on the show, they're going to ask you for what is the definitive track on that album and why? Why is that the track that makes this album essential? Which I think is a great question. And then they award you different points. They award you certain numbers of points for different answers, and then they sort of add it all up at the end and they determine whether or not indeed this album goes to 11 or not.
Oh, that's fun. That sounds like a good time. Check it out, guys. You said it's only on Spotify, right? That's where they're
Only on Spotify. These guys are on Spotify, so if you're a Spotify listener for When Does Podcast, give these guys a listen. This One Goes to 11 is the title.
Nice.
And I think they're on their fifth season. Wow. So they're all of us. Because this is our fourth season, as we said. But yeah, it's a lot of fun. I had a great time talking with them. Great guys, and just a great excuse to just talk about music more,
Absolutely, guys. Check it out. Our man Jared's been on a couple other pods. He's done such a great job. Always love hearing him get out there and get on some other podcast and do what he does great, which is talking about music. He's so knowledgeable and always has great insights. So give it a listen, guys.
Well, absolutely. Thank you. Thank you very much, Ed. Ed, I really appreciate that. And keep your ears open for when Ed appears. And of course, we'll be promoting that. And those guys are going to be guests on our show in the coming months. We're going to set up an interview with them. We're not going to tell you what the subject is just yet, but it's something we haven't covered yet. It's something we haven't covered at all. We should have really a while ago.
Yeah, but I mean, I get why we probably had enough to go back and to dig into this. But yeah, I know we're teasing it out, but yeah, it's something we haven't explored yet in Prince's musical career that became became important element in music maybe in the 80s. And then. Yeah. From then on. So hint. So yeah, but we'll dig in deeper on that with those guys. So yeah, looking forward to that at some point.
Yeah, that'll be fun. And you know, Ed, it occurs to me too, since we're speaking of that. Now I'm not sure if this raises to the level of, you know, Prince in the news, but it was announced that there is going to be a super deluxe edition of Diamonds and Pearls, which we all sort of were anticipating, right?
Yeah, absolutely. No, and I know some folks on the Facebook page were giving us heads up along the way that this news was coming out, and then it was officially announced. You know, it's funny. I reactively went right to, because this came up in, I forget which podcast we were doing, this whole, I guess when we released the two little mini singles.
Yeah, the little mini singles.
He released them. The estate did, of course. But anyway, was like, I what do you guys feel about these super deluxe releases?
I know you're not a fan of it. You're not a big fan of it, right?
I just think, like I said on that other podcast, I think I would be more appreciative of smaller chunks of music being packaged and delivered than remastering. I mean, I'm all about remastering a previous release and maybe adding a couple additional tracks, but I think it's incredibly expensive to purchase as a fan. Now, I know we have streaming services to kind of bridge those gaps, but, and I don't know, like, and I feel like the more and more, I mean, this is sort of a result from being doing the podcast. I think time and time again, and I think it's going to come up today when we talk about this album from Third Eye Girl, you get overwhelmed by the amount of music and you can't really get into it. And it's just like, it's too much to digest, and then you get lost in the music and songs get, are underappreciated because you just can't give it the time it deserves. So I'm more of a fan of chunking it out in smaller pieces, but I know the folks, I raised that question on the Facebook page, and a lot of fans, which, you know, which you would expect, are like, listen, I'm just excited about a new Prince release. It's new music. I'm all in. If I have to get a second job to pay for it, I'll do it. You know? So I appreciate that perspective too, because they package them well. The estate does a pretty nice job on packaging those super deluxe editions. So I get it.
They do. I love that point, because I would love, I'm sure you would too. I'd love to get some of those vinyl editions, but my God, they're
so insane. Expensive. It's insane.
It's an insane amount of money.
12 LP edition of, you know, whatever. Yeah. So.
And like, they're like, what, $350, I think, right?
In the hundreds of dollars, no doubt.
Yeah, hundreds of dollars, yeah. But anyway, it's exciting. I do agree. I hear both sides of this argument very well, because I think your point about absorbing all the material is well made.
Yeah.
It's exciting to know this stuff is going to come out. I mean, that's cool. So yeah, we'll see. And of course, folks, we will get there. We will do a deep dive into that at some point, into the Diamonds and Pearls Super Deluxe when we get there.
Yep.
There's lots of other stuff we got to get to first, including what we're talking about today, Edward. What are we talking about? You mentioned referenced it.
Yeah, we're talking about Plectrum Electrum.
Plectrum Electrum. Prince's album with the aforementioned band Third Eye Girl, his only album with this band.
Yeah.
Ed, what do you remember about Plectrum Electrum? It wasn't that long ago, not quite 10 years.
It's hard to believe it wasn't that long ago, honestly, when you think about it in terms of his full career. You know, honestly, I was very cynical at this stage. And again, it's funny. I didn't, again, as I mentioned in the last pod, I know we weren't particular fans of 2010.
No, we weren't. Although a lot of people are, and I have not
heard from anyone who said they were. Everyone's pretty, at least on the Facebook traffic, have been pretty like, yo, yeah, guys. There was someone who actually said I was pretty much dreading listening to the podcast just because of the content of the album. But they appreciated the podcast. But
I want to say that there were plenty of folks on the Instagram page who noted that they really liked 2010, and there's a lot of tracks off it that really speak to them. So I want to say, I mentioned this on the Instagram, our opinions are our own, yep. and we respect all Prince opinions.
Absolutely.
Mostly.
They can all live together in the same place.
They can all live.
We're going to shut up into the attic a cousin, a redheaded cousin. So, you know how it is, guys. I know you get into this with facts and figures, but we're talking about like a 3-4 year gap between 2010 and this release. I think it's around 4 years, I guess. Anyway, so that might be the biggest gap of his career in terms of a release. I remember the idea of Third Eye Girl because he was doing press around this. He was appearing on different, like Jimmy Fallon. I think he was on, might have been even on Good Morning America or different places where he performed with them. And I'm going to be honest with you guys. I was a little cynical. I was like, it's a gimmick. Like, he's just putting this band together. I don't know if there's any value in this band. And to the point I was making earlier, this got washed in my mind, my collective mind, because this got released the same time as Artificial Age got released. And that, in my opinion, got a little more attention because that was, you know, the noted Prince solo release. So I was way more interested and curious about that music than I was about this project with Third Eye Girl. So this album, Electrum Electrum, was a first listen to me for purposes of the podcast. So, but yeah, I might have seen him do like a song and I just thought, oh, it's kind of just him doing real guitar oriented, but maybe there's not a lot of life in the music. Like I kind of went there directly without giving this album even a try, frankly. So, but do you remember him putting this band together at all? Or
I do because I think what I remember is exactly what you said, Ed, is I remember him like actively popping up on every talk show and late night show and with the band, you know, and I felt like really heavily promoting the band. And I remember thinking at the time, like, oh, this is, you know, so we had the Revolution, we had the MPG, and this is the first time since then he's had this is the band.
Yeah.
This is the band. And he wanted that to be a big deal. I will say in retrospect, it's surprising that they only the way he promoted it at the time and made it seem like this was going to be a longer concern, like they were going to be recording and touring more.
Yeah.
But Third Eye Girl went away. I mean, we'll talk about that in a minute. But I do remember the seeming omnipresence of them and him all over the place and him wearing the, you know, the glasses with the third eye on
the third
top
eye, absolutely. And that kind of masky thing he was wearing over his eyes.
Yes.
It shows up in the Hit and Run album covers. We'll get there in a bit, but yeah.
And what I also remember is that I right now anyway, don't have any memory of any member of the band Third Eye Girl ever talking during any of these interviews. It was always just him. That's what I remember. Mm-hmm. But much like yourself, I didn't listen to the record. In 2014, I was listening to other things and, you know, I just wasn't there. So I didn't really listen to it. And I think we both feel, not to give away anything, but maybe a little pleasantly surprised by this record, I think.
I was wondrously surprised, to be frank with you. So this will be fun to chat through today. You know, if you don't mind, Jared, I know we have facts and figures. Do you want me to talk a little bit? I'm going to reference very generously from the Prince All the Songs, The Story Behind Every Track book about the origins of Third Eye Girl, how this even happened?
Yeah, please. I wish you would.
Give it a couple minutes.
We got
time is not an issue here.
Time is not an issue.
Guys, kick back, kick your feet up, grab that drink, relax.
Grab that drink, take your shoes off.
Once upon a time, folks, in Prince Land. So it's interesting because the book that I just referenced starts with this quote, which I think is a great way to lead into the origins of this configuration. That he was making this quote about New Power Generation. This is back in 94. He says about New Power Generation, I love this band. I just wish they were all girls. Is what he said. This is about New Power Generation back in 94. And you know, guys, like this could be an interesting pod feature at some point, how he's featured women throughout his career in different ways. Wendy and Lisa, some of the players in MPG, Candy, you know, different folks.
Rosie.
Sheila E's career. What did you say? Sheena Easton?
Rosie Gay.
I just assumed you said Sheena Easton. I don't know why I thought of that.
Also Sheena Easton. We're not going to abide any Sheena Easton hating here.
I'm not, but I want to do a quick pause to say this. I saw this. Now, listen, I'm late on the uptake on movie watching, as Jared knows, because I don't know why. I just don't get around to seeing movies when they come out, but maybe years later. I was looking for a movie last weekend on a streaming movie on Netflix, and I was looking up like what to watch. Did you ever see the movie Arrival?
Yes.
By the way, another, I was blown away by that movie. It's probably one of my favorite movies I've ever seen. I'm not a sci-fi guy at all. I love that movie. Do you remember? So, guys, if you haven't seen the movie, it's an alien kind of alien coming down, aliens coming down to the Earth. Why are they here? But a very different twist on it. Very smartly done. Very beautifully shot and well acted. So a lot of pluses. But there was 12 landings that occurred across the globe. Right. And they were trying to figure out why. And they made a reference to say the only way we can tie this together is Sheena Easton had the number one single in all of these 12 locations at the same time. How that came into the script, I don't know, but I really popped and I was like, that's hilarious. Like, that's how random the assortment
Sheena
of
Sheena is universal. That's the message.
That's what it is. Yeah. That's why they came. They came to meet Sheena Easton. Sorry.
Why wouldn't you? I mean, look at her, for God's sakes.
Take us to your Sheena is what they said. That was their first line. Anyway, sorry guys, a little bit of an aside there. So anyway, so Prince gets done with his Welcome to America tour. Well, I'm sorry, Welcome to Australia tour, that version of it. And he already had a bassist, Ida Nielsen. And he kind of decided he wanted to discard or get rid of, or just maybe put on hold, put on the back burner, the whole New Power Generation concept, and really focus on a new configuration. But he retained Ida for that purpose. And he discovers the drummer, Jared, on YouTube. So the drummer of this configuration, we got Ida Nielsen on bass. We'll be talking about her and her work, and you'll hear it prominently on this album. Hannah Welton was posting drum videos on YouTube of her playing drums to Prince tracks. He was impressed. He wrote an email to her. He invited her out to Paisley Park. She came out thinking it was an audition. She pretty much already had the gig. Now, I think the interesting thing is, too, he must have been aware of her and her husband. I don't know if it was her husband at the time, but Joshua Welton, who ends up being the producer of Artificial Age. We'll talk about that when we get to their next podcast. But they also happen to be very devout Christians. So you can see how that maybe connected. Yes. They became like fast friends because of that kind of shared way of life, I guess, a better way to describe it. Prince tasked them, that couple, with finding, let's find a guitarist. They went out and found Donna Grantis, who then gets added to the band. And then, and it's crazy because, you know, Joshua becomes a producer for Prince. Donna Grantis's boyfriend, Trevor Gay, he becomes the director of the Prince estate. So like he really bought, I know it's like you said, they didn't record any more albums, but like these guys got established in Prince's life. Like it was beyond music. Yeah,
like became pretty prominent in his universe.
Yeah. It's kind of crazy. And then the idea was, hey, I'm getting a band together to start. I want to go on tour. Let's start learning my music, my repertoire. But then he was starting to have some jam sessions with them and started recording them. And that became the evolution of this album that we'll be talking about today. So pretty interesting on the assembly side of him bringing the band together. And you would, as you would imagine, like Prince was just, they were just rehearsing nonstop. Like
I can imagine.
Working them. And there's some good stories about, I have a couple quotes as we're getting to some of the songs too, that some of the players mentioned about working with Prince. So anyway, so that's the origins of Third Eye Girl.
I think it's pretty fascinating.
It is. It's just, and it's, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I think it is. I think it's very fascinating.
And well, since you went there, Ed, I guess I may as well mention this. I mean, I was going to save it for a little bit later, but I think it makes sense to talk about it now. I do have a little bit of information about at least some of what the Third Eye Girl, what those members have done since that time.
Okay, yeah. Yeah.
So as you mentioned, Hannah Welton, who was the drummer, and her husband, what was her husband's name again?
Joshua.
Yep. They started their own Christian ministry. So
as far as I know, they're
running that ministry. So that's what they're doing.
Yeah.
Now, Donna Grantis, who's the guitar player, she's released a couple of albums and she worked with Mike McCready, who, and I don't know if you'd know that name, but he's Pearl Jam's legendary lead guitar player.
Oh, okay.
She released an album. Her last album she released was called Diamonds and Dynamite. And the Associated Press said this about that album, quote, recorded live to tape in just 2 days, a pace similar to the many of great jazz albums. Diamonds and Dynamite is an experimentally adventurous set, which contains ample evidence why Prince held Grantis in such high regard.
Oh, that's awesome. I'll have to check that album out. What's it called again, the album?
It's called Diamonds and Dynamite.
Okay.
And then Ida Nielsen. Is that how you pronounce it?
I think it's Nielsen, I think. Yeah.
Nielsen. She was the bass player. She's released 5 solo albums. And the most recent was from 2020, titled 02022020. That's the title.
Love it. That's the right
so
title.
So they have all been busy doing other things. I think I did a quick look at like sort of all their websites and, you know, stuff like that. And clearly and understandably, they consider this to be sort of their all their individual high watermarks, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I might put Prince playing with Prince as probably a high watermark.
I would think so. Although, again, Grant has played with, you know, Mike McCready from Pearl Jam pretty good, but still.
Yeah.
Prince.
Yeah. No, I gotcha. Yep. Yep.
They've all done, I guess, what they wanted to do and needed to do. So that's cool. Should we talk about some facts and figures?
Bring on the Polectrum Electrum facts and figures, Jared.
Here we go. Polectrum Electrum is the 36th studio album by Mr. Prince Rogers Nelson. The first and only, as we said, to feature Third Eye Girl as the backing band. It was released on September 26th, so we just passed that anniversary, 2014. Or actually, it hasn't happened yet. Sorry.
That's right. Not yet.
Today's the 23rd. Yep. So 3 more days, it'll be the anniversary.
A timely review. That now, worked out nicely.
Here's why the release of this album is also noteworthy, Ed. So it was released by NPG Records, right?
Yep.
But under a license to Warner Brothers
Records. That's correct.
So that's pretty interesting.
Do you know how that came about?
Talk to us about it. Tell us
the story. Interestingly, so... Again, guys, think about the year 2014. If we do some math on 1984 and 2014, there was a lot of hubbub about doing a kind of a Purple Rain reconfiguration, remastering. Am I doing the math? Is that 40 years? 30 years? 30 years. Sorry, my bad. Yep. That's not the math. Wasn't that hard, Ed. God, for God's sake. 30. Jeez. Anyway,
it's early.
So apparently Prince reached out to Warner to say, hey, maybe we can work together on doing something special for Purple Rain. As they negotiated through that idea, Prince was able to then grab this deal. And guess what, guys? He got control of his masters.
There you go.
With that negotiation with Warner. So he really settled that score. Excuse me. And then obviously they were involved with that release for this album. And also, of course, Artificial Age, which was they were released at the same time. But
yeah, right. Yeah, anyway. Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Artificial Age was released simultaneously on the same day. The length of this record, Plectrum Electrum, is 44 minutes exactly.
Mm.
And the producer is listed as Prince Third Eye Girl. Not
there
just
you go.
Prince. Yeah. Mm. Now, Ed, this is going to be maybe a little bit of a challenge for you, given your history.
Oh, geez. Yeah.
There were 3 singles. There were 3 singles. I'll give you the dates. May 16th, 2013, February 3rd, 2014, and then September 26th, 2014. 3 singles. You want to give it a try?
Or
do
I'll guess, but I just guess. Fix Your Life Up.
Was number 1. Very good.
Oh, geez. See, after that, I'm going to really be whiffing. Did he release Another Love?
He did not.
Ah, it's a bummer. Funk and Roll?
Nope.
All right, I'll stop because I'm just going through the album at this point.
The second one was Pretzel Body Logic.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm. And the third one was White Caps.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Now, for sales-wise, it did pretty well, all things considered. It did debut at number 8 on the Billboard 200, sold 26,000 copies in its first week. It dropped a little bit more, but it did reach number 1 on the Billboard Rock Albums chart, which is pretty good. And then it reached the top 10 in sales in the following countries. This is sort of an interesting smattering. Top 10 in Switzerland.
Okay.
Norway. Mm-hmm. Hungary,
yep.
The Netherlands, of course.
Obviously. Yeah, obviously.
And Denmark.
And in the Netherlands, that's just Steph buying like 300,000 copies.
Hey, Steph, how you doing? You bought 1,000 copies of this record that first day. So Switzerland, Norway, Hungary, the Netherlands, and Denmark. Of those 5 countries, which one do you think had the highest chart position?
Netherlands.
Hungary was the highest.
Okay. Well.
Interesting. So we talked about the band.
Do you know this? Maybe I don't know if you know this answer. I can't recall. Was this packaged in record stores as a twofer? Like, were you buying this along with it? They were two separate physical.
They were two
packages.
Separate records. Yeah.
Okay.
They were two separate.
I just want to double check.
As far as I know.
Yeah. Because I just streamed mine at the time. That's, you know, streaming was already there at that point. So I didn't buy anything, but went online and did it anyway.
Yeah.
Okay.
So now, Ed, what I did do is this. It's time for reviews. And there was a lot of press about Plectrum Electrum and Artificial Age. I think because it was being viewed as something of an event or a return to form.
Yep.
And so I was able to find a lot more press about these two records outside of our usual sources. So I thought it might be fun for a change to not reference all those usual sources. The only one I went back to because we love them in an ironic way was Pitchfork.
Yeah, Pitchfork's giving a review. We do it.
So we're going to start with Pitchfork, and then we'll dive into some different ones this go around. So here's what Pitchfork had to say. They gave it a 3.8, which of course they did, right?
That's 3.8 out of 10. Am I correct?
3.8 out of 10.
Wow. Okay, yeah, go ahead.
Pitchfork is so Pitchforky. So, okay, here's what they had to say.
By the way, I think that whole team over there has a bunch of Peter Gabriel European hoodies they're probably wearing right now.
They're all wearing them right now. They're all wearing them in tandem, 100%. So, okay, quote, Pitchfork. Artificial Age is not a return to form by any means, but a modestly exciting Prince album. That's certainly more than we could expect in 2014, and it's certainly more than we get out of Plectrum Electrum.
Hmm.
Prince recorded the album with his all-female backing band, Third Eye Girl. All have backgrounds and even degrees in rock and jazz, so it's obvious they have immense chops. The rhythm section locked down the grooves on the punk surf rock Mars and the strutting Stop This Train. And Grantis, formerly a member of the New Power Generation, according to this.
Oh, okay.
And solos on Another Love with Princely Abandon. What they don't have is much of a personality. Recorded live in the studio using analog equipment, the album is nevertheless too proficient, too slick, and too professional to come across as much more than anonymous.
Hmm.
They show little of the kinky inventiveness of the Revolution or the innate versatility of the New Power Generation. Instead, Plectrum is crammed with predictable rap rock riffs, vague alt-rock menace, and bluesy showboating. Especially blasting from Paisley Park, this is a perversely unimaginative and restrictive idea of rock and roll, with none of the musical freedom that Prince has traditionally shown. One of the great pop synthesists, he has blended so many different styles and sounds so fluidly that his best music sounds positively utopian, a world without charts or genres, release schedules, or label contracts. Prince and Third Eye Girl have good intentions, of course, and at times the album sounds like a rebuttal to the pesky rock is dead palaver that so many of the forum's aging practitioners have memorized. Quote, a girl with a guitar is 12 times better than another crazy boy band of boys, Prince exerts on Fix Your Life Up. But he's decrying prefab pop groups while backed by a prefab pop group, preaching a female empowerment while playing up the novelty of an all-female band.
Someone's a little cranky when they did that review.
Well, when are they never? Are they even their tens are cranky? Like they're like it's. I feel like, you know, we should do a deep dive in what does it take to become a Pitchfork reviewer? I guess just be miserable and a misery.
I tell you, that would be a wonderful video short that we should shoot at some point because that would
we
be fun.
We should shoot that. Like I'm interviewing to review for Pitchfork.
Absolutely. You know? Yep.
What's your take? Well, the Beatles were terrible. Like that. Yeah. Like that,
and I could be like the HR director for Pitchfork and talk about what we look for.
Totally. We should do that. I mean, geez, it's Pitchfork. I shake my head and smile at you, Pitchfork.
And honestly, I'm going to tell you, that was probably partly why I didn't give it a lot of attention, because I think some and I was Pitchforked at that time. I was really letting Pitchfork guide my guide my musical interest.
That's a great verb. I've been pitchforked.
Yeah.
Totally.
So yeah, I'm sure. I think generally, and I'll be here as you go through some of these other reviews. I feel like generally a lot of the reviews didn't talk much about Plectrum Electrum or kind of
kind of looked at it as a toss off almost to some degree and like focus on artificial age because that was like his solo thing. But anyway, I'll let you talk about some of these other reviews.
Well, here's one. Here's this next one I'm going to reference. I don't think, not that I can remember, in the 80 plus episodes we've done of the show, I don't think I've ever read a review from this outlet. This is from Time Magazine.
Oh, I don't think we've done a Time now.
I don't think so. So here's what Time Magazine had to say about Plectrum Electrum. Quote, Plectrum Electrum, on the other hand, is sonically and thematically consistent, brash, and swaggering, where artificial age is eclectic and laid back. The genre of the day is hard bluesy rock, a good choice when it comes to showcasing Third Eye Girls' technical skills. The instrumental title track is a solid example of the form, stuffed with chunky, bold riffs and expertly played rhythms. But while there's evidence of proficiency to spare throughout Plectrum Electrum, the album is less compelling than Artificial Age, save for slower-paced outliers like Stop This Train and Tic-Tac-Toe. Prince is a tough act to match when it comes to vocal agility and charisma, even in his mid-50s. And indeed, the album's best songs feature him playing an able duet partner and lending a touch of sensuality to the proceedings. Otherwise, songs like opener Wow and single Pretzel Body Logic are surprisingly anemic, given the heavy crunch of their guitar lines and arrangements. Even though Plectrum Electrum is a less worthwhile effort than Artificial Age, it still stands tall over most of Prince's other late period output. On its own, it would mark a restoration of energy and liveliness to his discography for the first time in a decade.
Okay.
I mean, that's sort of like a mixed blessing of things.
Yeah.
I'll just show my hand now. I completely disagree with the evaluation of Wow. I'm just going to say that.
Right now. No, I hear you. Yeah. I think we'll be on the same page there.
I really disagree. So that was Time Magazine. I don't think I've done this one before, Ed. The Telegraph, the UK paper.
Have
I ever done the Telegraph?
Nope.
I don't think Mm-mm. so. Nope. Here's what the Telegraph had to say. I mean, this goes to show you how people were excited about these records that, anyway.
Maybe it helps to have Warner Brothers partnering with you to get the word out.
Maybe it does.
Yeah.
Okay. The Telegraph, UK paper, they said this, quote, Plectrum Electrum, his collaborative album with Third Eye Girl, represents a more intriguing departure, even if it too reaches back into the past, making a bold connection with a time when Jimi Hendrix was the last great black American rock star before funk really left rock and roll to the white man. There is more than a whiff of Hendrix about the bravura title track instrumental, a mesh of thick twin guitar hooks, and free-flying improvised solos over a rolling groove that keeps shifting beneath the heavy rock surface. It is, really, this underlying funkiness that makes Prince's rock so alive, while the act of performing with other players of skill and character, Third Eye Girl, adds a meaty, organic character to the whole album. As rockers go, Wow is audacious and brilliant. Fix Your Life Up is a rip-roaring stomp, and Another Love, absolutely fantastic, with a soul-powered vocal and a wild air guitar outro. It is not particularly an album for metalheads, Prince being too multifaceted to get bogged down in a single genre. He gives fellow band members lead vocal duties on sassy, deliciously lightweight girl band pop rock tracks like the hip-hop-inflected Boy Trouble, Lover's rock-flavored Stop This Train, and sensuous groover Tic-Tac-Toe. Perhaps because he can't just rely on elastic grooves to hypnotize listeners, the rock format appears to have concentrated him on songwriting basics. Whitecaps is a highlight, evincing a California dreaminess worthy of classic Fleetwood Mac. That's a line that would appeal to him. He'd love to hear that.
Yeah.
Both albums include the track Funk and Roll, his solo delivery sleek and spacious, the band version, a wilder, looser delight. At 56 years old, there is temptation to proclaim that Prince is emphatically back, although I am not sure that he ever really went away. He may not have had a big hit single since the early 90s, but these represent his 33rd and 34th albums, some of which have been double, triple, and quadruple sets. It would be ridiculous to accuse a genuinely great artist of excessive creativity, but somewhere along the line, he lost pop penetration, swamping listeners with so much music, to your point, Ed, only a dedicated aficionado could hope to keep up. What elevates and unites these two offerings is a sense of commercial purpose and attack, an attempt to refocus the Prince brand. Best of all, Prince sounds like he's having a lot of fun, and fans will too.
Nice. That's a pretty good review.
That's pretty good.
Yeah.
That's pretty good. So next on the review list, we have another
one. When we say pretty good, we mean we pretty much agree with what
we pretty much agree with that one. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. I've never referenced the Chicago Tribune before, which is surprising given that their critic is a guy named Greg Kot, K-O-T. Do you know Greg Kot, Ed? Nope. You ever hear him?
No.
He's quite good. And he is the co-host of a really good music podcast called Sound Opinions with another critic named
Jim. Oh, I've heard of Sound Opinions. Yeah.
Yeah. This is him. He's a good reviewer. He's a good writer too. Here's what Greg Kot had to say about Plectrum Electrum. Plectrum Electrum with his new rock quartet, Third Eye Girl, is basically an excuse for Prince to go nuts on his guitar. Hardcore Prince guitar freaks, those who yearn for an entire album of six string slash and burn in the mold of Jimi Hendrix, Ernie Isley, Eddie Hazel, and Prince himself on Purple Rain and I Could Never Take the Place of Your Man, will find much to love on Plectrum Electrum. Prince is an appreciator as much as an innovator, and he compresses about 50 years of guitar history into 12 tracks. The screaming punctuations on the feedback-saturated Ain't Turning Round and Another Love, the Curtis Mayfield-style lyricism of Whitecaps, the punky urgency of Mars. But though the Third Eye Girl rhythm section of Donna, Hannah, and Ida provides a solid foundation and shares some lead vocals, the songs feel slight, a touch predictable. It's not meant to be a particularly heavy album lyrically or conceptually, more of a blowout. If there's an underlying theme, it revolves around the 56-year-old elder statesman dispensing tips to younger artists who have emerged in his wake, many of them in his debt. Frank Ocean, Miguel, Timberlake, Erykah Badu, D'Angelo, Outkast, Maxwell, Leanne DeHavis, who sings backing vocals on Artificial Age. On Fix Your Life Up, he counsels, don't worry about what the crowd does, just be good at what you love. And what Prince loves in this album is clear. Guitar, guitar, and more guitar.
Okay.
Yeah, I think that's well considered. Again, I'm not sure that I completely agree with it, but I think it's not, he's not being mean like Pitchfork.
Oh, no. He's compressing 50 years of guitar history into 12 tracks. That's a pretty solid compliment.
That's pretty solid.
Yeah.
So I'll say a couple more here. So this is really brief. This one's from Uncut. Uncut is a really good British rock magazine I've read over the years. They just said briefly here, there are no songs here to touch past glories. Third Eye Girl's excitement in the studio is captured, however. They just remind you he's still around, short of a tune, but the unique inhabitant of a purple planet all his own. And they gave it a score out of 100. They gave it a 60. So I guess that's like a, but like a C plus.
Yeah.
Okay. Here's Paste magazine. If you remember Paste.
Yeah.
Paste had this to say. Plectrum Electrum is Prince's rock record. There's nothing to do here but have some fun. Okay. Of course, none of this is possible without his airtight band, Third Eye Girl. All the tracks were recorded live. If there was a notable flub, they started the song over. Some of that looseness is lost through the album's sanitized production, but then again, this is Prince. The conundrum with Plectrum Electrum is this. On one hand, it's thrilling to hear Prince and Third Eye Girl blast out Zeppelin riffs on songs like Wow, or the instrumental title track, or go full Ramones on Mars. On the other hand, the songs aren't particularly striking or original. Essentially, if these were by anyone other than Prince, they'd be promptly swept aside. The best songs on Plectrum Electrum are not the rockers, but the funkers and the slow jams. Songs Tic-Tac-Toe and Whitecaps recall some of Prince's classic sound with the added bonus of a muscular band performing them. That's not a slight against the Revolution or the MPG. It just feels like Third Eye Girl's sole purpose is to funk and roll, with no thin 80s-style production to stand in their way. Taken as a whole, Plectrum Electrum is a fantastic rock and roll party record, though there are some more serious lyrical themes sprinkled throughout. But when you really picked apart some of the pieces, it becomes less interesting. But it's Prince, and Prince gets a pass. He always does.
Prince gets a pass? He always does. I don't know about that, but okay.
Yeah, I'm not sure about that either.
It's a weird way to end that review, but okay.
That's a weird way to end that review. So those are our sort of a smattering of different reviews from different albums.
What did they know, Jared, is my point.
Well, and you're always right about this. What do they know? Nothing, because we know. We are the arbiter.
The definitive voice on, and the right and last word on assessment of Prince material right here at When Doves Cop Podcast.
I can only assume that when the super deluxe edition of Plectrum Electrum comes out, we will be asked to write the liner notes. Don't you think?
I would think so. I mean,
I would think. Please. So you want to do this? Should we get into these tracks?
Let's do it.
Let's do it. All right, here we go. Plectrum Electrum, track number one. This is titled Wow.
Sorry, I don't know what came over me. The cycle of the moon affects the motion of the sun.
Yeah. Of all of the exclamations one can have, indicating excitement, shock, fear, joy, what's your favorite exclamation? What's your go-to turn of phrase that just inadvertently comes out of your mouth in a moment of sheer delight?
I think you know me pretty well, Jared, and you know that I'm one to, you know, hold the cards close to the vest. So yeah, think
you are.
I have a default when something happens that I don't want to commit too strongly.
Yeah.
I'll go, interesting.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
I do that quite often, I realize.
Yeah.
I want to give a shout to my mother. You know my mom.
I do know your mom. Yeah, I'm seeing her later today.
I love when she... Oh, my. Jeez. Anyway, Hokey Smokes is her big...
Hokey Smokes?
Yeah. To the point where me and my sister have seriously considered that we need to open a medicinal, like, growing cannabis here in Pennsylvania and call the brand Hokey Smokes with my mom as the figurehead.
I think, can we call it When Doves Podcast Presents Hokey Smokes brand cannabis?
Sure, why not?
I feel like that's an untapped revenue stream we should be pursuing. By the way, if anybody wants to be a subscriber to When Doves Podcast, you can sign up on our Buzzsprout page.
Sure.
Hokey Smokes. Obviously, I'm going to be installing that into my vernacular now as well.
Got to do it. How about you? Is there something you do a nice little, what's your...
Yeah, mine, you know, not dissimilar. Mine's kind of like a,
As two actors, we're not the most expressive in our,
no, not super
in our personal lives.
But I will say, wow, on this. Ed, what do you make of wow?
Wow, man. I'll tell you, I wrote down. I mean, from the first moment, I don't know if you felt this way with the material generally, and maybe it's because they were purportedly recording this as a group in a room. It wasn't instrument by instrument, like Prince kind of layers stuff on. It has more life and boom from the first moment. It just feels like a different, has a different vibe to it. I mean, listen, wonderfully different than 2010. Like, it just feels way more alive. And I really loved this being the opening track, though. We'll talk about another track where I'm like, oh, that's weird. But anyway, I'll get there. But I love, given that we haven't heard from him in, say, 4 years, that his opening line is, hello, how are you? Yeah. Like, I found that, like, such a wonderful opening. And it's, and the verses aren't incredibly, like, deep, but I enjoy them. There's more spark to the lines. And it feels like it's effortless, but not throw off effortless. It's not like he's just, let me put some words together. It doesn't matter what I say. Like, there's sort of like a little tongue in cheek. Some of his humor comes back. Like, it just overall just feels incredibly, incredibly more alive to me. I love the chorus. I think it's hella catchy. It bangs. I really dig the whole way they do that. I think his backing band, I think Third Eye, sounds great. They sound great with Prince's voice. I really love it. I feel like the chorus is as close to a you know, we're getting into Oktoberfest, as close to a beer swigging kind of like chorus that he's ever probably come up with, where you could like kind of get that. What are those called? The
Beer Steins.
Thank you. The Steins. And start kind of waving those around and singing this together, guys. So if you're going to an Oktoberfest, do that. Ripping guitar solo. I mean, just ripping guitar solo. And I love, again, his humor goes through this insane guitar solo. The things, it's swirling around, the music, the life of it's just banging and swirling and hitting a peak. It drops. And then he does the whole, give me a minute. let me get myself together. I love that moment. That yeah. moment is so good.
Yeah.
I just love this. I really do. I think this is a really wonderful opening track for this project. I think it's killer. So, what do you think of it?
Well, first of all, let me say I wish Prince and Third Eye Girl had only performed in Lederhosen. Because now I think that would have been a good marketing move. I am with you 100%. I mean, I'm in right from jump. Right from jump. I love the guitar tone. I yep. love the simplicity of the mix. Drums, bass, guitar. That's
yep.
it.
Yep.
That's what we're talking about. Lyrically, it's fairly simple. You know, this is about being knocked out by someone. It's, you know, you see someone and wow, they just knock you off your feet. But the music sounds like astonishment to me. It sounds like wow, right? Yep. And I'm digging that hardcore. I'm digging the conjunction of lyrical intent with the musical feel. Now, having said that, I think that the line, the cycle of the moon affects the motion of the sea, what you did, is pretty clever.
Yeah.
I think that's a pretty clever yeah. turn of phrase. And I want to say that for anyone, any of these reviewers who were knocking this as just a guitar album, I think they've forgotten that Prince is a rock star, not just an R&B star, not just a funk star. He's a rock and roll star, and rock and roll isn't a dirty word. So let's fucking go.
Like, I love it, dude. I love it. Yeah.
Let's fucking do this. That's my take. I love. Wow. Knocks me out.
Let me give you a little bit more background on this song, because I think it's interesting. So there was the original of this song was called The Unexpected by an artist called Liv Warfield.
Yeah.
And I listened to it. It's a much slower. You can find this guy's on streaming service if you want to just check it out to compare. Much slower version, almost like feels like Crimson and Clover style, like
interesting.
To it.
Okay. Yeah.
So I think this Prince version is far surpasses that original. So, but check it out. It's kind of interesting. And I honestly thought, I thought it was like he took the song and reimagined it and put new lyrics on it. It's pretty much lyric for lyric, but I love that. That song's called The Unexpected. This song's called Wow. And the lyric literally says, you can call it The Unexpected or you can call it Wow, which I think is like a little clever little thing.
That's pretty clever.
So again, just clever. Really, I think, yeah, there's so much more life in this song. So totally. I'm digging it. All right, let's move on to the second song. We'll see if this holds the mark. The second track is called Pretzel Body Logic.
Hit a plane, humming back on the run. I'm better than none.
Now, Jared, it's been well established that I live in the snack belt of Pennsylvania. So,
you do. That's very true. You do.
You know, pretzels. Let's just talk about them, because they don't get the discussion points that they deserve. Are you a pretzel rod guy? Do you like the traditional kind of pretzel shape? Do you like pretzel nuggets? Like, is there a particular shape of a pretzel body that you would prefer?
Yeah, this is an excellent question. I'm here for this question. I will tell you that sort of later in life, I have become more of a pretzel person than a potato chip person. Like, I still love a potato chip, but I've gotten into pretzels. And there's a pretzel. Oh, what is the manufacturer called? I can't remember. But the when you get the bag, it says splits on it.
Those are Hanover.
Maybe they're Hanover, but they're. You know, they're the traditional, what would you call that? I guess you call it a pretzel shape.
The pretzel shape.
Curly Q, whatever. And they have like little, like, I don't know if they do. I don't know if they bake them. I don't know what happens. I don't know what they do in their magic factory. But these little pretzels, they oddly have so much flavor.
Mm.
I love them. So I like those. I also have to admit that if you put one of those little barrels of peanut butter frilled nuggets, I'd eat the whole damn,
yeah, those are pretty damn good, man.
What about you? What's your go-to pretzel?
I've kind of bounced around between pretzel logs, the regular pretzels. I've gone dark pretzel. I mean, there's a lot of variety, guys. There's more variety out there than you would ever imagine with pretzels.
When I was a kid, when we would get pretzel rods, I would pretend I was like a beaver chewing on a piece of wood.
You can do the cigar like I would do, like, hey.
Sometimes I do that, but sometimes
Schmeh.
I'm like,
Schmeh, I work for Pitchfork, Schmeh. one star.
I like that the Penguin and Edward G. Robinson apparently work for Pitchfork.
Yeah. What did you think about this song, Pretzel Body Logic, Jared?
Well, I'll say this. I couldn't quite follow the narrative of this tune lyrically. At first, I thought it was about a band on tour and the issues.
I don't know what story is going on here.
But then I'm not sure that holds up. But I'll say this. The music is fucking banging. Give me that bass solo. Give me that guitar solo. Thick and fat. And that's all I wrote because I'm like, I'll eat this pretzel. I'll have this pretzel. I'm in on it. What did you
I'm
think?
With you, man. I mean, I my first thing I wrote is it just sounds like he's having so much fun here. Like,
I agree.
And it's so wonderful to hear. There's a simple bass line, that simple guitar. You know, the guitar riff or that kind of that thing reminded me so much of Gary. Do you remember Gary Wright, Dreamweaver, Gary Wright?
Sure.
Yeah, that second single. What was it called? My heart is on fire. My love is alive. It's similar to that kind of groove, but it's much more amped up and sped up. It's beautiful. Right. And even though, I'm with you, like this whole logic of the song is kind of its own thing. But there's more pop to the lyric. Like it's crunchy and fun to even hear, like banks on a holiday, credits overrun, right?
Yeah.
And like just certain ways he's phrasing things that just, they pop better. They just sound fresh.
Yeah.
Love the dual guitar solo with Grantis. I think it's so good. And like you said, that bass break. Oh man, this band can play, folks.
This band can play.
There's some, and then he's drizzling in, or they are, I guess, because they both produce, all of them, I guess, were involved in the production. But like even this little, like that subtle backmasking that's happening, like he's throwing some little subtle effects. They're not overwhelming, but they make it interesting and add some variety. And that woo-hoo he does at the end, it just sounds genuine from him.
Yes.
He's having fun, man. This is great
totally
to hear.
Agree. I couldn't agree with you more.
And one last point about this. So in October 2015, a remix of this track, which was called Pretzel Body Logic Reloaded. It should have been called Pretzel Body Logic Rods or Splits. Better way to say it. Was made available on Tidal, the streaming service, as the purple pick of the week. I went and listened to it. You can find it on YouTube if you want to. I'm not a fan of it. It's just like it's just like a super over remixed version of it, which isn't great. But if you have an interest in it, it is out there on YouTube if you want to give that a listen. It's called Pretzel Body Logic Reloaded, if you want to give it a try.
Well, we like to be completists here.
We try our best. We try.
Anyway, we're going to move on. Track number three on Plectrum Electrum. This is called Ain't Turning Round. Ed, now, in your history, as a driver, and you've got a cool little car right now that you really enjoy.
Yep.
A little convertible. Have you ever had a U-turn? Have you ever had a move with your car that went badly? That either you got pulled over, you got into an accident, you got completely lost, or had someone start screaming at you as you try to turn around in a car?
Turning around specifically, not that I can recall, but I did, unfortunately, was in an accident years and years and years ago where I actually spun out, like completely was doing 360.
Whoa, like action movie style?
It was bad, man. Yeah, I was in college at the time. So this is like 100 years ago, but me and a friend, it was sad. There was like another guy in the car. So we were in like an Omni. It was a Dodge Omni. So it was a tiny little
thing. Box of a car.
And it was over the winter. It was over Christmas break, the holiday break. And I was driving, ironically, to pick up another car from my family that I've driven the night before. But the lights burned out on it or something. There was some weird issue. So I had to this is way before cell phones, guys. So I had to pull over to the side of the road, go to someone's house and knock on the door and be like, I use your phone to call my parents up because I can't drive this car back. There's no headlights.
Right.
Got picked up. The next day I was going back to pick up the car and I guess there was a little bit of ice on the road. So I went around a turn and I was going too fast apparently.
Yeah.
And I remember going and I fishtailed and I must have turned the wheel the wrong way.
Oh,
literally just started spinning. It blew out all, all four tires blew out.
Oh my God.
It was bad. Yeah. And the car was a mess. Like luckily there was no other cars in the other lane.
Yeah.
Cause it would have been really a bad, bad, bad accident. But yeah, that was scary as all could be.
Wow. That's terrible.
How about you? Did you ever have anything like an accident or anything like that?
I've certainly had, you know, I've been rear-ended, and I have unfortunately rear-ended someone also years ago. But nothing where I spun around. Although I remember this story, this happened to my brother. My brother was, I think he was still in high school. Yeah. He had just gotten his license and, someone ran a red light, right? A perpendicular light, and they plowed into the sort of the engine block of the car my brother was driving. What must have been my dad's car, I guess.
Yeah.
And the car did spin, and it knocked him out of the front seat, out of his shoes. It knocked him out of his shoes. Wow. He had sneakers on. Boom. And it knocked him into the back seat. He got his bell rung and he had a concussion, but he was okay. But since then, my brother to this day does not drive. He won't drive a car.
I can see where something like that, an event like that, can change that for sure. My goodness. Totally. Yeah.
Well, is this a car wreck, this track, or is this is this smooth sailing? What do you make of this track?
It's not a car wreck. I mean, I know there's going to be some people out there, because I've already was getting some sense online that folks don't like. Is it Hannah? I think was the lead vocal.
This is Hannah singing this. Yeah,
I like her voice. I think her voice is fine. Like,
I have a thought on it. Yeah, keep going. Yeah.
I mean, to me, this song sounds like. This does time capsule me. Like, this sounds like I would have maybe heard on radio in the 90s when grunge was kind of hot and we're listening to Hole and Garbage and those types of folks. Like, it kind of reminded me of that. Like, I was surprised she could hit some of the high notes that she hit. She kind of with conviction. So, I mean, I like the ominous bass break. There's some really scorching guitar. And I think what I like about it is the vocal sounds. How do I say this? It's a nice change of pace from Prince's vocal. Like, I like Prince's vocals on the first two tracks, but I like the different sound, a different tone of her voice. I think it's a different sound that doesn't sound like diminished, like, oh, we're going down three rungs in vocal ability because of this new singer. Like, it's just a different feel to it. And I think it works well. I think there's some really cool subtle effects on the track. I got a little nervous at the bridge, and this is, I think, is going to be a new maybe reference we'll do from now on. It started to kind of venture into Everybody Loves Me territory for just a minute or two.
God help us. Yeah.
Right. And I was like, oh, no, don't.
No, don't do it. Don't do
but
it.
Then it gets saved by, you know, it gets saved because it kind of turns back around. And I love the line, maybe the hand you're looking for is at the end of your arms. I think that is such a solid line. Like, that was, and it's worth repeating three or four times, which they do, because it's such a solid line.
As is often the case, I made note of the same exact.
Yeah, line. You and I usually can focus in this on similar things. Again, more torching guitar at the end, and I love the effect towards the end of the song, the production effect of the guitar moving from left channel, right channel, left channel, right channel, and kind of going back and forth. I just think it's really fun. So, I mean, I'm not sure if it's like my favorite of even the three we talked about, but I think it's a good track. Like, I think it's a solid, good track, and I think her vocal's fine in this as well.
I agree with you. I mean, I think. I'm not sure that Hannah's a great singer, but there's an edge to her vocal tone that I really like. There's something about it that really falls nicely on my ear, which I really, really like. And to echo you, Ed, I think that it is nice to hear her vocal here. And I think, to me, three tracks in, this indicates to me that this is more of a truly band experience than even the MPG or the Revolution were. I mean, let's think about that for a second. So, you know, we get Rosie Gaines singing backup and stuff and, you know, and, you know, Tony M, but like they're without question side players in these moments. Right. There's no doubt about that. Or if you think about Wendy and Lisa, if you exclude Computer Blue, we don't hear them get a lead vocal until I Wonder You, right? On Parade.
Yeah, they weren't featured in a ton of songs. No.
They weren't, not vocally anyway. Mm-mm. And so here he is, his first record with this band and his only record with this band, as we know, but like third track, boom, we get this person to sing the lead. And so I think there's something notable in that. I think that he was interested in I think he's interested in the community of band here. You know, these last several records were just him. you know, and I think he probably liked, frankly, having the company in the studio and like being part of that, that unit, you know, and I think that appealed to him. So to me, yeah, go ahead.
No, I was going to say too, and I can't speak with any certainty with this particular track, but it sounds like a lot of times when he was recording with the group, they would lay down some stuff. And sometimes he would just say, guys, I'm going to leave for a while. You guys work on a vocal.
Yes.
And I think that's what makes this work, is because a lot of times you'll hear Prince work with another vocalist on a track. And basically, as you know, from listening, hearing the originals album and whatnot, he'll put a guiding vocal down.
Right.
I doubt that was a guiding vocal, because I don't think he would sing the style that she sang in.
No, so I agree.
To me, that's what really, like, he's allowing her to completely stamp her own voice into this track. That's why I think it's effective. It's not just, hey guys, I have an idea here. I'm going to lay a guiding vocal down. Just follow it. You do what you want to do on the vocal. I'll be curious to see what you come up with.
Yeah, I agree.
Kind of what it felt like to me, which I think
I think that's right. I think that's right. Yeah. I will say that musically, there's more of those thick tones in this track, which I really like. I'm fully into how much of a rock album this is, you know, and there's a big wailing guitar solo at the end of this with the bass sliding back and forth from the right channel to the left channel. I don't know if you listen to it on headphones, but it slides back and forth, mm-hmm. giving Ain't Turn Around a slight disorientation to it, which would happen when you turn around, right? You get a little dizzy.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I'm into it. I this track works for me too. It's not my favorite of the first three, but I like it. But
yeah,
I like
same,
it.
Same.
Yeah.
All right, let's move on. So the next track is an instrumental track, and it's called, it's the album title. Title track, Electrum Electrum. Jared, this is a question that I almost daily wake up to thinking about, is if Carmen Electra had a child, like, would you think she would have done like a Palectra Electra, or a, it's like a nice rhyming scheme for the child name to kind of just make it kind of pop?
Yeah. I mean, waking up thinking about Carmen makes sense to me. we're going to have to, I just want to say now, I want to announce this now. So we actually do this. We need to do a full, like, 3-hour episode about Carmen's debut record. We got to do a whole episode about that record.
We may live stream a 24-hour conversation about
We might do that. Yeah, Carmen Electra, Palectra Electra, Hector
Electra?
Yeah, Hector Electra.
Sure, why not?
Vector Electra. Yeah, something like that. Victor, but it's Vector. Yeah, I think that's
the good. Vector Electra.
The Vector Electra. Yeah. Which also sounds like it would be a good name for a car, the Vector Electric.
An electronic vehicle, an EV. Absolutely.
Absolutely. Electric. Yeah.
I'm going to write that down and send that to your buddy Elon. Should we put on X, your friend Elon?
Yeah, tell Elon I was asking for him. Yeah, I'm sure he's having
Jared, this is such a weird aside, and we can always edit this out. But I mentioned to Jared, I think I talked to Jared a couple weeks ago, one of my little side trips over Labor Day weekend here in the States. I went to this Dark Sky Park in Pennsylvania. So
yes.
Dark Sky Parks mean what it sounds like. There's not a lot of unnatural light around, so it's a great place to view the night sky. And it was a great trip, and it was a wonderful state park here in Pennsylvania. As we're up there, the ranger who was doing a kind of a presentation to kind of orient us to the sky was like, oh, my God, look over there. We saw the whole, is it Skylink? What's the Earthlink? What's the thing that the satellites he's released?
Is it Earthlink? I think it's called Earthlink.
Earthlink. So you see this trail. It's otherworldly, as you would imagine. There's like a line of like 1,000 lights just in a line scrolling across the sky. And that's your buddy Elon's satellites for internet use for rural areas in the United States.
When, again, I know we're going off on a tangent, but I'm totally keeping this in. When are we going to realize that Elon Musk is a Bond villain? Like, when are we going to realize that? Like, he's a James Bond villain.
He really is. He's like, what's the guy from The Simpsons who ran the company?
Oh, Hank Scorpio.
He's Hank Scorpio.
He's 100% Hank Scorpio.
Absolutely.
Elon.
Anyway, Jared, let's get away from Elon. Let's talk about this Plectrum Electrum track. What do you think about this as a standalone track?
Man, this is an old school blues riffage, like a Cream song in many ways to me. An instrumental piece. It drives along. Now, maybe it's a little repetitive in that, those riffs repeat. But I think we've seen over the years and through this discography that when Prince does an instrumental, they're often very repetitive. It's almost like he sort of just gets a riff in his head and he just likes playing it. So he does it over and over and over and over again.
Yeah.
But I got to say, I really like the drumming a lot on this track. I think the drumming in particular really pops for me. The guitar solo that pops up midway through, I think is pretty good. And I was listening to this a couple of times, I found myself sort of just like kind of lazily bopping my head to it. Mm-hmm. And I found myself, I can drift along to this. Like, I'm kind of enjoying this slow ride down this river. But I will say that there's a tonal shift around 2 minutes and 15 seconds in where it takes on a fuzzier shade and it chews a bit more. And I really like that tonal shift a lot. So this is actually a winner for me in the end, Plectrum Electrum. I enjoy how it feels, and I like sort of, like I said, floating along with it. How about you? What did you make of it?
A little different take on it. I mean, I didn't dislike it by any means. I was a little confused by it in this respect. I felt it was a little odd in sequencing. We have a couple bangers right off the top, and then because this almost sounds like, and it's weird because I wouldn't want to replace Wow as an opener because I just love the way it sounds and I love that opening line, but I almost feel like this sounds like this would be the mission statement for the album. So like, why not? I feel like it kind of gets diminished a little bit because of the power of the music and the vocal and the lyric of the first couple tracks. Then we go to instrumental and I'm like, why are we doing instrumental here? I don't quite get it. So I think it's fine. Like, I don't dislike it. So this was just a little background. This was an instrumental that was composed by Donna Granis. It actually was released on her 2012 album Sweets. So this was like a track that they brought in the group brought in from her. I don't think it's particularly distinctive in any way. I think it's very competent and in that way it feels a little less complicated and interesting to me than the first three tracks until you get to the moment you were describing where it kind of moves into this weird, interesting, funky rhythm guitar. And then Prince tears a solo. And I wrote this, that moment had me rethinking my life and my opinion on the song.
Yeah, it does, because it makes it totally different.
Maybe takes a little different shape. So I have mixed feelings about the track. I'm not in love with it as much as you are. I don't dislike it, and I don't actively dislike it in any particular way, but it just has me like puzzled a little bit, like the inclusion of this. I'm not sure the inclusion and where it's placed.
I think we're always interested in sequencing. I think it's always something sort of interesting to think about. And I think your point is well made. To me, a thought that actually just occurred to me. One is that I agree. It would have made more sense as the closing track. First of all,
That's an interesting idea because I was thinking of an opening track, but maybe as a final statement.
As sort of a final statement, it also makes me think of there's a couple of albums. There's a lot of albums I can think of examples like this, but the one that's springing to mind right now is Pearl Jam's first record, 10, and their album is bookended with an instrumental that is titled Master Slave is the title of that instrumental. Uh-huh. Yep. And you fade into it. And then we go into the first track, which is Once. And then the final track, which is Release, we fade out of that and we go back into Master Slave. I feel like something like that could have been done here where like it is maybe it bookends it or it sort of it leads us into the album.
Yeah.
Leads us out. Something like that could have been interesting. So I hear you on that. I don't think that you're wrong about that. I think the placement is a little odd.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. All right. So let us move on from Plectrum Electrum to track number 5 on this record. This is titled Whitecaps.
I saw whitecaps on the water today. 15 minutes after you went away. Couldn't find a reason.
Now, Ed, we have established you are not a fan of the water, particularly.
Not a huge fan of water, no.
No, not a huge fan of water. So And you attribute that to a near drowning incident when you were a kid, correct?
Yeah. I fell into a pool when I was, I forget what age I was. It might've been 4 or 5 and just, yeah. Yeah.
So what happens to you, if anything, when you are watching movies or TV about, you know, the ocean and like the perfect storm and Jaws and White Squall and anything where either.
Why in the world would I watch a movie?
That so you don't watch those movies.
Defy my fear of water.
Confront your fear.
Recently we talked about this, guys. Just so you know, this is a little Ed comeback winning story. Where Ed decided because of his age and needing to do something active because my body's falling apart at my advanced age. I took swimming lessons in August.
That's right. And you really enjoyed it, you said.
And I really enjoyed it. And I've been going back to the pool probably 4 or 5 times a week now. And I've really, really enjoyed that I've kind of just slayed the dragon on this. And I can't tell you, like, if you drop me in the middle of the ocean, I'd be like, oh, I'm fine. Like, no.
Right.
I don't know if you people get those feelings. Like, I don't think I saw The Perfect Storm, but I definitely saw, what was the Paul Newman, Robert Redford project.
Oh,
by himself.
All is Lost, it's called.
All is Lost.
Yeah.
Those things, like the overwhelming, like kind of out in the middle of nowhere. I think that's being in the ocean's part of it, but that kind of being so remote that you're in the middle of nowhere freaks me out. I get a kind of like angsty feeling in my gut about that.
Did you see that story a couple months ago about the Australian dude who was lost in the ocean with his dog for like?
Yeah. I remember
that. Lived. Weren't they lost for like 2 months or something?
It was some crazy amount of time. Yeah.
Yeah. Insane. Craziness. Yeah. Well, what did you think of these white caps? Do these white caps make you nervous?
Not at all. I was like, first of all, I wrote, ooh, what a change of pace and feel.
Yes.
When the song starts. Really nice rim hat work, good, really subtle, nice drumming in there, like kind of In the Air Tonight, subtle drums going on in the background.
Yeah.
And like this really cool, dreamy guitar, really great. And I really was intrigued by the bass line because, of course, White Caps, the visual of that, the imagery of that, choppy waters, whatever. I felt the bass line almost sounded like a seagull call, the way it was kind of worked up the neck of the guitar, of the bass guitar. I really love the imagery of the White Caps for like troubled seas and these kind of emotions that Hannah's feeling when she delivers this. And I liked some of the lyrics I thought were great. Like she transitions from seeing White Caps to seeing the black butterfly lose its wings today, which I thought was such cinched by the candle underneath the archway. Like.
Yeah,
that's pretty good stuff, man.
It's good stuff. I wrote the same thing.
Of course you did.
Of course I did. Yep.
And I think her and Prince's vocals sound really good in harmony. Like, I just think they complement each other really well. I'm a big fan of this song. I think this is a really great and surprising track, given where we've just come from on this album. What about you?
I completely agree. The thing that struck out to me about this track, it feels effortless to me.
Yeah.
It feels like it just sort of occurs. It just sort of happens. And we are here for this sort of spontaneity of its creation. I really like it too. I mean, it floats along beautifully, like that black butterfly that lost its wings. And, you know, one of the reviews mentioned comparing this to Curtis Mayfield, this particular track. And I can hear that, you know, because Curtis Mayfield so also beautifully could create these effortless songs that you float along to. So that works for me. I will say this. I think that 5 tracks in, I think allowing a band to be a part of this process in a really full way is doing something for Prince. There's less weight. There's less responsibility, however marginal that difference may be. And as a result, he feels freer to me on this record. Than he has in a little while, a little more relaxed, a little more at ease. Even to your point, Ed, in his vocal on this, it's so gentle and it feels so calm, which, you know, also, I mean, it fits the tone of the narrative of the song. I realize that, but it doesn't feel like he's working to get there. It feels like it's just happening.
Yeah.
I think it's a delight. I think it's an absolute delight.
Yeah,
and I agree. There are some beautiful lyrics in this one, and I will say I really like how it closed. I saw White Caps on the water today, 15 minutes after you went away.
Yeah, it was great. It's a great ending. It's a really good ending. Yeah.
The specificity of it is great. And so I'm in on Whitecaps a lot. Whitecaps is good stuff.
Yeah. And I love it because I have to think this is him doing a little channeling some Joni, right? Little Joni Mitchell stuff.
Like, oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Like clouds and such.
His forever girl.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Let's move on. So the next song is called Fix Your Life Up. America, you might fare better. And London, you're sure to be toast. You always get the dream that you deserve from what you value the most. You need to fix your life up. Jared, I can't believe I haven't asked you this before. Are you a handy guy around the house? Are you able to fix stuff up? Are you kind of like, are you a DIY guy?
I will say I'm not a super DIY guy. I can certainly, you know, when push comes to shove, I can solve the problem. I mean, at least I like to think I can. Mm. My wife, Christy, Ed, who you know very well.
I do. She's a great woman. Love her.
Is quite handy. She's quite handy. But she's also a person who's like, oh, this whole wall has collapsed in the house. Let me watch 6 videos about it and then I'll do it. Right. I'm like, well, can we just hire somebody to do that? Can we, you know, to quote my, I have a cousin who says this all the time, just get the guy who does it.
And listen, as you know, living in Philly, someone knows the guy, right? Yeah, I know someone a guy. Knows the I guy. Know a guy. I know a guy. Let's talk. I know a guy.
Absolutely. So why not get the guy?
What do you think about Fix Your Life Up?
Well, you know what? It's interesting. When this intro kicks in, it almost feels like a Foreigner track to me.
I have a different reference, but it's funny you say that. I have a similar thing.
Some kind of like late 70s, early 80s, like hard rock band kind of thing. But man, do I dig that guitar riff when it gets going. I really like the guitar riff on it a lot. There's also a liquid quality to the bass line on this track that really appeals to my ear, that real thick, like gloopy sort of sound on the bass that I really like a lot. This is another one of many later Prince tracks wherein the lyrical message isn't exactly consistent, right? He's talking about world leaders. He's talking about women in rock music. He's talking about politics kind of vaguely, but I don't care in the end because I like how this grooves.
Yeah.
I like how it sort of pumps along. And so Fix Your Life Up is another, yeah, I dig it. It's another winner for me. How about you?
I'm not as in love with it as you are. I mean, I do appreciate it. It's funny you said about the opening. I honestly thought it reminded me of Just What I Needed by the Cars.
Totally. Yeah.
You know that thing? Yeah. I think it's kind of fun. It's definitely updated and more modern sounding, but it just reminded me of that a little bit. I'm not in love with the lyrics. I thought the lyrics were a little light.
The lyrics are problems. Yeah.
So that was the one. I copied these lyrics down because I just like an example. Tell me how some people walk in the sun while others just walk in the dark. Okay. Looking at the world through a barrel of a gun, hands behind their back in a parked car. The lyrics were the thing I think that kind of knocked this down for me a couple notches. I do love the energy of the chorus. I think the energy of that chorus is just, it's urgent. It's pleading. His vocal is great on that. I feel like the song, it's interesting, like the way it popped and the way he used the backing vocal for the Third Eye Girl folks was it almost sounded a little Go-Go's. I don't know why my head went to Go-Go's for a while.
Oh, interesting. But
I like the general sentiment, like don't worry about what the crowd does, just worry about being good at what you love. But I guess this ventures, and I think some of the reviews mentioned this, it ventures back into his sort of more of his lecture series that he's been doing in the latter part of his career. Like, let me tell you how you should run your life and your career, which sometimes I think can land a little tin in my ear. That's the thing that was affecting. So I don't hate the song. It's certainly not one of my favorites of the album. And I do appreciate the bum rush at the end with the bass slaps and the guitar and that little drum break. Again, just like we needed more validation, but this band can play. That's what I took away from the song.
I couldn't agree with you more. That's exactly right.
Yeah.
All right. Well, let's look at track number 7 on Plectro Electrum. This is titled Boy Trouble featuring Lizzo and Sophia Aris. Boy trouble. Now, Ed, you've had trouble with boys in the past.
I did. Yeah, I did. Sadly, yeah.
Yeah. You know what? That just sounds so personal. Maybe we shouldn't dive too deep. I don't want you to be too vulnerable about it. What do you think of this track, Boy Trouble? What do you think of it?
This is a tricky one for me, man.
Yeah, man, I agree. Anyway, go ahead. Yeah.
So let me say this. This is a really interesting track to me because I'm confounded by it. Like, I don't look particularly like the raps, like the rap stuff that much. I probably like the sung parts less. There's like some kind of vamping that I guess it's Hannah's doing, I guess, or I don't know if it's one of the other artists, but I actually like that less. But I really find the chorus catchy as hell. Like the whole spoken word chants and stuff, I think are catchy. Like it kept ringing in my head, and not in a bad way, not like in the earwormy, like, oh my God, get the song out of my head way. I thought it was really fun. And there's like a driving, plopping bass in here. So, like, I don't know. Overall, I would say don't love the rap. Appreciate that it's so different sounding. Like, I don't think there's anything in his catalog that sounds anything remotely like this track. And I do think this is one where he said, hey, we're laying down the music. Invite Lizzo in. Invite the other artists. I can't remember the name you mentioned. You guys figure out. Yeah, you guys, you can write the rest of the song. I'm done. You guys, you have a night to figure this out and figure it out. And that's kind of what happened, like how Lizzo got invited in. Like, you guys just write the lyrics and figure it out. So I don't know. What did you think about the end result of that?
I had a tougher time with this one. For me, like, the first line I wrote was, one of these things is not like the other.
Well, that's true for sure. Yeah.
You know, this is a very different kind of sound than we've heard so far.
Yep.
And while I really like, in particular, the bass work here on this track in particular, I think the bass work is really, really good. The piece on the whole doesn't work for me as well. I think because it's a funk / hip hop track. And it's not that I'm not into that, but that's not what this album has been to this point. So, like, again, talking about sequencing and sort of, yep, you know, tonal thematics and stuff like that, it just doesn't. I wish it wasn't here. Because it sort of takes me out of what has been a fairly unified tapestry of what this record is. And I'll tell you the truth. As a result, of its sort of what to me felt like a jarring placement on this record, I'm not sure I can properly evaluate it. Like, because it feels like it doesn't belong to me. So, and also, I mean, not for nothing, and I'm not making any comment on this one way or the other, Lizzo has clearly become so problematic, I guess.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
In the present moment, which I find interesting. She was just sued again.
Wow, no kidding.
Someone else who worked for her. And I'm just mentioning that. I'm not commenting on it. I'm not familiar with Lizzo's catalog at all. And
yeah, nor I. I really don't know her stuff at all.
I don't really don't know her stuff. I know people love her. So that's neither here nor there. I'm just sort of making a comment on that. But the tonal whole of this track doesn't feel like it fits to me. So I wish it wasn't on the album. I don't think it fits here. So we have
different tastes, because I think I appreciate that it's so different that I kind of appreciate that they included it just because it's a very different sound and a different shape.
Yeah, and I get that perspective. Like, I understand that perspective, wrong though it may be.
Of course. Okay, Mr. Pitchfork. Let's move on.
Boy, all I want to do
that is clip when you interview with Pitchfork. Let's move on to the next track. It's called Stop This Train.
Keeping everybody from hearing me crying, cause with every other beat of my heart, I know that we should never be apart. And if it hurts this bad by dawn, I'm gonna stop this train and never get back on.
Jared, would you agree in the world of models, like not models like supermodels, but in model like trains, model planes, are model trains the best kind of model to work with? Do you think that's the best version of a model train, model plane,
you know, model
whatever?
I think it is. I don't think I told this story. When the summer started, lo those many months ago, Christy and I went on this 35-mile round trip bike ride. We went from our home here in Center City out to the Morris Arboretum.
Nice.
And they have the coolest model train display there.
It's nice.
These model train, and there's like, you know how it is. There's like eight or nine of them, and they're sort of buzzing all over the place, going in and out of models of Philadelphia landmarks built out of natural materials.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah.
It was very cool. Like, it was super fun. And so I think model trains are the one. You can do so, model trains move, and they do all kinds of cool stuff. And yeah, model trains. You know what? Quick side note here. Neil Young, friend of the pod. Uncle Neil.
Hey, Neil.
So Neil has a son, Ben, I think it's Ben, who has, I can't remember. He has a disability of some sort. I can't remember what it is now. But one of the ways that they bonded when Ben was young was Ben loved model trains.
Yeah.
So Neil Young ended up, as far as I know, he still is a co-owner of Lionel Model Trains, like the top.
Oh, wow.
I think that was pretty cool of him to do that.
When I worked at the Fairmount Park Conservancy, we would do our holiday programming. We actually worked with a train, like a model train company that came in, and I was fascinated by the expense of some of the models that you could buy.
Oh my God, some of them were crazy expensive.
And it's really cool because it's, of course, very historical. You can buy like a certain, version of a train that was only in use for X period of time, that's a certain line used within the States, whatnot. So I think it's really interesting. Side story is I had a model train. It didn't work. And, similar to the story about you with how would I attack that? Like the stairs not working for the basement. Yeah. I basically just let it go. And I just ended up calling it SEPTA.
For those who are not getting that joke, SEPTA is the Southeastern Pennsylvania Transportation Authority. The trains that run through Philly.
Notorious for being like on either down or not working or late or whatever. Yes. They actually had a marketing campaign, which cracked me up. It was called We're Getting There.
Yeah, we're getting there.
And you know what? I love me some SEPTA.
Sure, of course.
There's something. Anyway, what about Stop This Train? You love them? What do you think about this? Is this track move? What do you think about this one?
Well, you know what? The first time I gave this one a listen, I wasn't into it. I wasn't digging it at first. However, after a second and third listen, it kind of grew on me after a while. It almost has a reggae rhythm to it, right? Not quite.
It does. I think you're right about that.
But it's close. It gets close to it. And I kind of dig that it's not quite a duet, but he is backing up the vocal on this in a really lovely way. And the to the point about the model trains, that ting 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 of the keyboards made me think of a toy train set. It made me think of a model train. I'm not sure if that was the intent, but that's what I hear. I will say that there is a slight, and you know how I feel about this, Ed. There was a slight auto-tune effect placed on the vocals. That I'm not crazy about, of course.
I'm surprised to hear that, but go ahead.
But it's not the end of the world. It's just unnecessary. So Stop This Train was a grower for me. It's something that I really came to enjoy more as I listened to it. How about you?
I'm with you too. And I'm going to say this generally with this album. This is an album that, I guess I'm getting ahead of the final review, but like I wanted to go back and keep listening to it over and over again.
Agreed.
And I'm with you. This is one that grows on you a bit. I mean, I didn't have an initial listen, and I'm like, I kind of liked it from the top, but it wasn't like super memorable from the beginning as compared to some of the other tracks, especially the bangers. But I love that little keyboard piano hook. I thought this was Prince singing with Hannah, but it's actually Joshua.
It is. It's not Prince.
Yeah, it's not Prince.
I thought it was Joshua.
Nope, it's Joshua.
Oh.
I was like, man, they sound kind of interesting together, and it sounds like a very different kind of Prince vocals because it wasn't a Prince vocal. It was Joshua who sang. So we actually let Joshua sing with Hannah, which I think is really interesting. And obviously, I think because they're an intimate pairing, I think it worked really well. And I almost felt like the way the vocal was recorded, I could almost imagine them recording this together in the same take, sharing a microphone. That's how well I thought their voices sounded together and how it was paired. So that was a genius idea to have Joshua give this a try with his I don't know if it's
nice.
Wife or his girlfriend,
agreed,
whatever.
Agreed.
And the sound of this points to Artificial Age to me. Like it has that sort of kind of nice, like easy, relaxed feeling that kind of, like you said, mellow. And I believe, is this the track that also has that Prince kind of vocal in the top that's kind of layered that goes, ooh, kind of ooze it in? I think this is the track that does that in this album. So I really love that ad as well. I'm a big fan of it. I think it's a great one. I really like it. And it's really interesting at the end. Did you notice when it faded out? It sounds like they're doing like another verse that kind of just fades
yes.
out.
Yes. Yes. I heard that. I like that too.
Yeah.
I like that too.
Yeah. All and right. I think it lands on the last third because I just can't get to sleep. And that's where it fades out, which I think is kind of a nice way to end the song. So
yeah, agreed.
Cool.
All right. Well, let's move on to track number 9. This is titled Another Love. Find another love. If you don't like this, baby, find another love. You don't have a right to fake it. Find another love. I try to be what you wanted. Now, Ed, longtime listeners of the show will know that clearly, you know, the big love of your life is your mom.
Yes.
As it should be, as it is for all of us. If you had to pick another love, who would you pick?
You, Jared.
See, now I set you up and you hit that dinger right out of the park. Bryce Harper style. Kyle Schwarber style.
Throwing the bat down. Flip back, bat flip and all.
Flip that bat. Did you see Nicky Castellanos flip that bat the other night when he hit the home run?
Yeah. Off the second deck.
Awesome.
Yeah. It's all right.
That's right.
How about you, Jared?
Ed, listen, I don't want to cause trouble here on the pod, but, you know, Christy's my other love. You're the primary one. You're number one.
You're a good friend, man. I appreciate that.
That's the truth. What do you think of Another Love? Do you have love for Another Love?
This song is amazing to me. I think this is just this song. I wrote this song there's so many O's on So for me. So good. I'm a huge fan of this track. His vocals great. It's in his mid range. He sounds so refreshed and revived on this track.
Yeah.
As compared to say 2010, right? There's so much swagger in his vocal. And somehow he pulls off this with the vocal, I think. Like, he sounds a bit exhausted and tired about the situation, but he doesn't sound tired in his vocal. Like, it sounds like he's so frustrated about the situation that he's singing about, but it just adds another layer to the delivery of his vocal in the track. I think the gals sing so well on the backing vocal on that just Another Love kind of chorus that they keep bringing back into the mix of the track. I love the verses. I love the echo effect. And the driving guitar solo is great. I think it serves the song incredibly well. And that, again, that Find Another Love almost sounds like has that almost Video Killed the Radio Star quality to it, like the way the vocals layered. And I love this line. I wonder if you picked this out. I may be just another so-and-so, but I'm the greatest living so you'll ever know. I think it's just...
That's great.
The line of the album. Like, I think that is so good. And then there's an interesting story about Donna, because Donna does a solo on this. I think that's mentioned in one of the reviews. And this, again, this is... I read this in one... I don't know if it was in the book or another something online, but apparently Prince said to her, hey, I'm going to have you do the solo on this. And she said, okay, well, let me work on it tonight, and then I can come back in tomorrow with some ideas and we can record. He goes, no, we're doing it right now. And like, and then like she, again, like just complimented that Prince was all about, you do it in the moment. You don't wait and think about it. It takes the spontaneity out of the track.
Yeah.
And she learned so much from that one experience.
Yeah.
And that's the beauty of working with someone like Prince, right?
Absolutely. So
I'm a huge fan of this track. How do you feel about it?
I like it too. There's a slow defiance to this track that appeals to me. It's almost like it purrs along, you know, for a while until the guitar solo kicks in before the third verse, which, and one of the things about the solo, which now makes a lot of sense given that information you just shared about the recording of it, there's some desperation in that guitar solo.
Which works for the song.
Which completely works for the song, but also, you can, again, it makes sense, like knowing that she was put on the spot.
Yeah.
And like, you got to do this right now. You can feel that desperation in it. And I like that a lot.
Absolutely.
It spills over into almost a wah-wah style effect on the guitar. And then the solo just burns bridges as it goes along.
Yeah.
They play. And so this is another track for me, not unlike Stop This Train in a way. The more I listen to it, the more I like it. It grows for me upon each listen. And Another Love, you know, you, Edwin, at the top of the episode, when we were talking about singles, you said, oh, was Another Love a single? It should have been.
Yeah.
This should have been a single.
Now, this is the reason it might not have been picked as a single, because this is actually a cover of another song. So this right. is a song by Alice Smith.
Right.
And it was just from an album from like a year before this release. So it was a pretty right. recent track. And I heard it. You can listen to it online. Of course, as you would imagine, it doesn't quite hit the high marks of this track. It's a little more mellow, a more R&B tinge to it. This has a little bit more of that guitar that he's bringing in, which really adds a lot of oomph to the song. But it's out there if you want to listen to it, just to do a comparison for sure.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
All right, let's move on. Next track is called Tic-Tac-Toe. Another question that I commonly just pops in my head. I can't imagine I haven't asked you this yet. Tic Tac's the best breath mint. Is that true?
Oh, man. You know what? I'm not sure if that's true. I'm not sure if Tic Tacs are the best breath mint. What are those? What are they called? Are they called icebreakers?
There's something called icebreakers. Yeah.
Yeah. Those icebreakers are an effective, powerful breath mint. I'm into it. But I will say this. From way back when, because I'm not really sure it's a breath mint, but I love the orange Tic Tacs.
There's something about those. I'm with you there. Something unique about those orange ones. I don't know what it is.
I don't know what it is, but like I could eat a bushel of those.
Yeah, those are really addictive. Those are highly addictive. So if children are listening, please avoid them at all costs.
But I will say that my go-to sort of breath freshener is really a good stick of gum. You know what I mean?
I'm an Altoid fan.
Oh, are you an Altoid person?
I'm a big Altoid fan, but that's because I'm a smash mad pitchfork kind of guy. So I like to be classy with my mints. It has to be in a tin, be held in a tin case. Like I can't have something just wrapped up.
When you are with your Altoids, are you a peppermint person or the
spearmint?
What's the spearmint? Oh, you're a spearmint person.
Yeah, I think I'm more spearmint. Isn't there a cinnamon? Is there a cinnamon one too? Right? Is there like a
there
cinnamon
is. Style? That's too intense for me. I can't.
Yeah, I like the cinnamon. I've always been a cinnamon fan in terms of like you're cinnamon spicy. Candies and hots. Like I've always been a fan of that.
Yeah, you're a spicy guy. That's why.
All right. So anyway, let's move on to Tic-Tac-Toe. Is this a spicy little number for you? What do you think about this one?
Well, you know, I wouldn't say so much spicy as I'd say there's something hazy and kind of dreamy about this track. You know, the dolphins crying. And
yeah.
Again, when you listen to your headphones, the intimacy of the vocals in the headphones, it feels very intimate. And it feels to me like this is a tune that you could play for an hour straight as you sort of slipped in and out of sleep. And I mean that as a good thing. I mean that as a compliment, that you drift along with it, you float along with it on this strange sort of river. You know, I think it's odd that it's titled Tic-Tac-Toe. I mean, that's the lyrical content, but it feels more like, you know, I don't know what, like cloudy day at the beach. Right. This is the title. You know, like it's just this very floating sort of dreamy thing that I like. I do. I like it. Yeah. And that dreaminess appeals to me. What about you?
No, I do, too. I really like it. It's interesting. The story behind this apparently is that Prince went to some party where they're playing the Cocteau Twins.
Oh, yeah, sure.
And he's a fan. And like the next day he wrote this track.
I wonder what year this was and when, who was playing because the Cocteau Twins, like heyday was 1985.
Yeah, I guess I think it was of the time. I think it was like 2013, 2014, but for whatever reason, they were just playing a lot of their tracks. I don't know why. I don't know if they were there or whatnot, but then he was like, let's do something like inspired by that. And here it is. And I really like it. It's quite a surprise. I'm with you. Those dreamy dolphin noises. I said in terms of the flow of this album, it's like, did I go to a rock show and then someone spiked my drink and then now I'm sort of like, where am I now?
Totally. Yeah.
Like what happened? Like it's but I love it. I think it's really cool. It's really breezy, like you said. And I like the general sense of the song. It was like a bunch of blind people playing tic-tac-toe, who knows where the zeros and the X's go. I think that's just a nice, solid, simple, but interesting line. Like you know. So, yeah, I'm a fan. I'm a fan.
Yeah. Yeah. Excellent. All right. Let us move on then to track number 11.
Penultimate track.
That's it. Alert. The penultimate track. This is titled Mars. Now, Ed, you know, I feel like we have discussed on various occasions celestial bodies.
Oh my God, many times.
You know, many times, sort of universal objects, things of that sort. So I'm going to go a different route here. Of all of the Roman counterparts to the Greek gods, is Mars your favorite?
Oh my God. Well, you have to give me a quick overview of all my options, because I don't know of all the
planets are named after the Roman versions of Greek gods.
Greek gods.
Mars is Aries. Jupiter is Zeus.
Oh.
Saturn is Kronos.
Oh.
Pluto is Hades.
Well, I'll say, I mean, honestly, look, Mars is just a nice, clean, I like just, it's just a nice word to just shoot out Mars. But I'm going to go with the Cronus Saturn, just because it allows me to say when I was at that dark sky park, I was able to see with a telescope Saturn.
Oh, you could see Saturn?
And its rings. You could see the rings.
No kidding.
It was wild. I felt like it was something like it wasn't real. Like it was really amazing to be able to see that with a telescope.
Oh, that's really cool.
Yeah.
Oh, that's really cool. And were you able to see like color? Could you make out?
No, because everything looks white from that distance. White. You just see the light coming out of it. So yeah, I was hoping it would be cool if you could see the color, but no, it was just the white. It almost looked 2D, like just that, but you could see the rings around. And sometimes you could see moons, which was kind of cool too, which is
that's cool. Planets. That's cool.
How about you?
I think I like Neptune, who's also Poseidon.
Sure.
I was always a fan of Poseidon. Sure.
And Poseidon Adventure is a movie that you're fond of. We talked about that recently.
We talked about that. It's very near and dear to my heart, obviously. What do you think of this Mars?
I'm not a huge fan of it. I mean, and I think it's much more of a style that I'm not particularly fond of. The lyrics start and I'm like, why is Prince working at McDonald's? I don't get it. Like it doesn't ring true to me. This feels really weird. I mean, I like the key changes. They keep changing keys with the guitar, so it's keeping me on my toes. I do like the end of the song where he basically saying like, hey, everybody in the world wants to be a star. If a rocket ship doesn't cost more than a car, brother might move to Mars.
I read the same line.
Yeah, man. I like that ending. And I just summed it up this way. I'm not sure I love this, but it makes its point. It gets the hell out of town quickly. And for that point alone, I appreciate it.
Yeah.
Like it comes, it hits quick, it makes its point and it moves on. Like it's for that. I appreciate what he did there.
Right. Which is why you can see why it was compared to a Ramones track.
Right. Because it's so short. Yeah.
Because they're so short. I'm with you on this. This is another example of a guitar tone I like, although the pace of the rhythm feels off to me somehow. Like it doesn't quite work. It feels, I don't know, I'm not sure if this is the word I want, but it feels sort of like stumbling. It's not quite there.
Okay.
Or like, you know what it feels like to me? You know how when you're a kid and you're running so fast that your momentum carries you forward and you start to fall, you start to trip? That's what it feels like to me. That's what the pace of this, like you're going faster than you're ready for.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so, yeah, I agree with you.
Which makes sense for a rocket ship to Mars, right? Like
totally makes sense for a rocket ship to Mars. So yeah, I'm with you on this. This is, I don't hate it, but this is not a favorite. Yeah.
Gotcha. All right. We move on to the last track of Plectrum Electrum. It is called Funk and Roll. Jared, I'm going to bring together a couple concepts we've talked about within this very podcast.
So, yeah, I'm in. Let's go.
Funk and roll. We talk about pretzel body logic earlier. Are you a fan of those pretzel bun rolls that you can use like a pretzel roll to eat a sandwich?
Oh my God. Like, I think they are life changing. they reveal the hidden heart of a sandwich or a burger or something.
Wow. Wow.
I'm in on those.
What about you?
Ship them
to any area of the world where there's conflicts. Azerbaijan, guys will be sending some pretzels.
Listen, this is it. This is the plan. I don't know if I've espoused my theory on war before, on how to end conflict, but here's my theory. And I think we can add this in.
I can't believe we waited this long to talk about it, but go ahead.
Yeah. If we go to some area of conflict,
yeah,
and we airdrop in 50 or 60 sick toddlers.
Oh.
And you just sort of airdrop them down because you know how this is. Well, Ed, you don't know, and neither do I. We don't have kids, but we know that lots of people do. Those little bastards are like germ warfare. Right?
No, to kill everybody involved?
No. Not to kill everybody, but like you drop all these, you gently airdrop all these toddlers and babies into the zone. They've all got bad colds and everything. Everybody gets sick. And everyone's like, and they're like, you know what? I got to stay in bed today.
Not feeling up to it.
I just don't feel good. And then you say, here's what will make you feel better. Here's a pretzel roll sandwich.
The one, too. I always thought, and I'm not going to mention the person's name because it'd be rude, if you could find someone who just universally is disliked, like Elon Musk. So let's say you
airdrop
Elon Musk in between the Palestinians and the Israelis. They both collectively hate that one person.
Yeah.
Bring them together. You can find that one person.
Yeah.
You know,
enemy is my friend.
Exactly. That's sweet.
That's all right.
Let's get back to the funk and roll. What do you think about this? Enemy, friend? Where are you with this one?
Well, frenemy, maybe.
Oh, okay.
Here's my thing with this. Again, bass work aside, which I think is top notch on this track. I think the bass work is top notch on this in particular. For me, I think the issue is this. I'm not convinced that Third Eye Girl is a funk band. They're a rock band.
Okay, that's fair.
I feel like they're being put into a box that they don't really fit. This isn't bad. I don't think this is bad, but it just doesn't sound right. Like, to me, this is a track that the MPG would have handled better.
Okay, that's a fair point. I'm with you there.
Yeah,
I see what you're saying.
And that's essentially my assessment. Like, you know, all these women play with incredible proficiency. They're clearly very skilled, but I don't think that they're a funk band. And it's like they're putting on a suit that doesn't fit.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I like this a lot more than you. I mean, yeah. I wrote this is reminiscent to me like Days of Wild, I wasn't a huge fan of that song. I think this is a better version of that type of song. This is like Get Your Groove On with Big Balls, to me. Like this
sure,
is like
sure.
You know? I think it's really funky. I like that. I love that opening line, finally beloved instead of dearly beloved, right?
Yes,
like finally beloved, we meet at last. I think that's a great way, and it makes sense for this to be the closer, given he's kind of putting that there. I love this line. The only way to last till the break of dawn is put your phone down and get your party on. I hate technology, as you know. So then it has this sort of, it does a slow break only to come back at neck break speed. I just think it's really a lot of fun, you know? So I think this, I really hear your point there because I'm with you. I don't think they're a configuration that's really powers into funk, probably are not the best funk outfit, but I think they do a good job here. It wasn't something that I was like noticing where I was like, oh man. But I mean, I'm with you. I could see where the MPG maybe could pull this off and maybe even add some other elements here. Yeah. So, I mean, I'm a fan. I think this is a good one. I think this is an effective closer. And I think it goes out in a high note. I dig it. And I like that he brings the crowd sounds into the end of it as well. Because they should get applause for this work. This was a great album.
So. I agree. So let's talk about our overall, final closing thoughts on this record. And then we'll do our track breakdown.
Yeah, this was I'll tell you, this is what makes this job super duper rewarding, is to be able to discover an album that I hadn't really considered before. And this was an amazing surprise. And I was delighted pretty much throughout the full album. He sounds refreshed here. He sounds more alive here. Everything sounds just like you said, more natural. It's not like he was trying to overcomplicate things. And I think that works in the favor of the album. It just felt like this was a group of folks who are great musicians, had good chemistry, and worked well together in a room. And here's the product. Like, I'd love to be able to sit as a fly on the wall as they were just recording these tracks in a room.
Yeah.
Because they were just jamming. And I think the lyrics are stronger, the vocals are stronger. So all around, I just think this is a really, really
And guys, if you haven't listened to this album because of various reasons, I could see why people would have lost this in the mix of what was happening in 2014 with Artificial Age. Please go back and listen to it. I will give this a strong 4 Prince symbols for the quality of this material. I think it's a really great album.
I'm on board with you. I got to say, I like this record a lot overall, a hell of a lot more than 2010. I think that playing with Third Eye Girl, and we've sort of already said this, but playing with this band jazzed him up and excited him in a fun way and reminded him what he could do with that guitar in his hand.
Yeah.
And that's not a bad thing. It, much like you said, Ed, this was really, honestly, a very pleasant surprise. I had not listened to Plectrum Electrum before. I didn't expect to enjoy it as much as I did. So I'm also going to give it a fairly high rating. I'm not sure if I'll go 4, but I could do 3.5, maybe even 3.75 Prince symbols, which is still pretty high. But yeah, this is a keeper. This is a keeper for me. Yeah,
absolutely. I'm going to keep listening to it as we go beyond. I almost wish we had a little more time in between the next pod just to keep, I can keep listening to this.
I know. Yeah.
How about your favorite track?
My favorite track is a tie. My favorite is Wow and White Caps is a tie for favorite.
Similar for me. I put Wow and Another Love as my favorite tracks for the album.
What's your least favorite?
Probably I was having trouble between a couple tracks here. Boy Trouble, I have considered as the worst track. I liked the least. Let's put it that way. But also Plectrum Electrum in terms of the sequencing and why it's there and stuff like that. So I'll go with Boy Trouble, I guess, of the two.
Mine was Boy Trouble. Yeah, that's my least favorite of the track. Yeah.
How about your most interesting track?
You know, I thought about this one for a while because I almost went with Funk and Roll. I almost went with Plectrum Electrum, but I settled back again on White Caps. I think sort of the duet nature of it, the dreamy quality of it, it's got a unique sound in his catalog, I think. And so for me, it became the most interesting. How about you?
I put Boy Trouble down because I just...
Sure. I see
just found it. I yeah, see that. It's such a different kind of sound for him. So I just found it very interesting. And I, again, like... parts of it I didn't like, but I found other parts catchy. So it just intrigues me, that whole track.
Yeah, I totally hear that. What was your favorite musical moment on the album?
I love On Another Love when he does that whole line about the so-and-so, and then I'm the greatest living so you ever know. I was like, damn, drop the mic, baby. That was a moment right there. How about you?
Well, you know, there are a few here that I could have gone with, but I think I got to go with like, the thing that got me from jump, which was the opening guitar riff from Wow, because it sets the tone. It just knocked me out and it made me lean in right away. And so that's why that's my favorite musical moment.
Totally get that. Totally get it.
All right. Well, now it's time for
Musicology.
Musicology. Edward, what you got on Musicology for this record today?
Jared, you're going to love me for this because since I'm your all-time love.
It's true.
Let's talk about David Bowie, Tin Machine.
Let's talk about Tin Machine. Thank God. I've been waiting to talk about it. Go ahead. Talk to me about Tin Machine.
No, I mean, guys, I'm not sure if people are familiar with this. Back in, I guess it was the late 80s, right? Was the first one?
Yeah, it was late 80s.
87, 88, 89 maybe. So Bowie put together a band. You'll know way more about this than I do. I did get the album, so I only know it as a fan who bought the album and really appreciated the sound. But this is Bowie. It was really interesting, even the look, right? It was like a kind of a hard-driving rock band that he configured, but they all wore suits with black ties. It was like really interesting how clean-cut they looked. But there were some bangers on that album, I recall, and I'm a fan. I think that got kind of sliced and diced by critics. I thought it was a really solid album. You probably have more information about it than I, but I think it's worth checking out, guys. Tin Machine by Bowie.
Tin Machine. Yeah, you're exactly right, Ed. And here's a fun little fact about this. The band was Bowie and Reeves Gabrels, who has gone on to play. He's a member of The Cure now, this guy, Reeves Gabrels, or Gabrels, maybe is how you pronounce it. And then the bass and the drummer in Tin Machine were the sons of Soupy Sales.
Say what?
Tony and Hunter Sales. They were the rhythm section of Tin Machine, the Sons of Soupy Sales. And they recorded two albums, Tin Machine and Tin Machine 2. And you are exactly right. They also released a live record. You're exactly right that people were really decrying it. It got really bad reviews and people weren't into it. And Bowie broke up that band right afterwards and went into back to a solo career with an album called Black Tie, White Noise. But those Tin Machine records, I think, are outstanding. And I think that they were ahead of their time. It's really slicing hard rock. It's hard rock music. But there are some songs on those albums. There's one called Amazing, which is just amazing.
It's great.
It's great.
Heaven in Here. There's a bunch of good tracks.
Everything Here. Heaven in Here. Under the God. Like, there's a bunch of really great songs. And to your point, how this ties in exactly, it was a guy who had a solo career who got energized by being in a band. So that I love that choice for you. That's excellent.
Cool.
That's excellent.
What did you come up with?
Well, I went with something I referenced earlier. I went with Cream, Disraeli Gears, which is their album from 1967. That's the album that's got Strange Brew, Sunshine of Your Love is on that record, Tales of Brave Ulysses is on that record. For my money, it's the best stuff that Clapton ever did by a country mile, except for maybe the Layla album. But he was never better than he was with Cream, because he had musicians of similar quality with him, Jack Bruce and Ginger Baker in this case. But it's the same kind of sound here, where it's guitar, bass, drums. It's full, rather. It's lush, not unlike Plectrum Electrum. And I think that, I don't know if I would say that, I don't know enough of Third Eye Girl, and we don't know enough of them as a unit to say that they all matched Prince in terms of musical ability, but they keep up with them pretty damn good on this record.
Yeah, for sure.
And that reminds me of Cream and Disraeli Gears. Clapton's a mess, and I think he's kind of an asshole, unfortunately. But Cream's Disraeli Gears, if you've never listened to it, this is what made Clapton the legend that he is. And it's an all-timer album for me. So that's my musicology.
Love it. Love it. Love it. Love it. Cool. Should we move on to
Dig If You Will the Picture? Ed, what do you think of this album cover? What do you make of this
one? I like it. I wish I knew my Hindi religion better, but I know there's a Hindian god associated with this.
I wrote the same thing that clearly the image invokes like Indian deities. It absolutely does.
And I think it's done really cleverly. I like the photography behind it and how they edited it, photoshopped it, whatever they did. Yeah. I think it's a nice, clean, and it refers back to the whole kind of mystical idea of third eye.
The existentialness of it all, absolutely. The third eye of it all. Yeah, I totally agree. I think it's notable because it doesn't feature Prince at all.
Right.
I think that's really notable. He's not in that image, unless he's hidden in there and we don't see him. But I don't think he is.
I don't think he is either. I'll have to go and dig deeper. I didn't really give it like that close of an eye to say, oh, maybe he's hidden somewhere within the image. But I looked, but didn't
spot him in there and anywhere. But I think that alone makes this a pretty notable cover. And it's certainly a whole universe is better than the 2010 cover.
Absolutely, man.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. Okay. All right. So that's that. And now it's time for...
question for you.
Bow, bow, psh, bow, bow, psh.
To the question of you.
Jared, I have a good one here, I think. So
yeah,
we talked about our friend Hannah Ford Welton, the drummer. Her
into the pod.
Boyfriend. Yeah. I would love to interview anybody from Third Eye.
I would love to get Third Eye Girl on. I would love it. Yeah.
We know you're out there listening. Joshua, we talked about, which will become a more of a prominent part of Prince's life, and especially producing the Artificial Age album that we'll be talking about next time. I'm going to talk about Joshua for a second. He is the nephew of a renowned, legendary jazz band leader.
Ooh.
Tell me who that person is for question of you. And you will get so many kudos and shout outs. It'll ring through the mountains.
Ed, that's an excellent question for you. I think that's a great one. So, folks, you know the drill. You can reach out to us on our Instagram feed. You can reach out on Facebook. You can email us at whendovespodcast@gmail.com.
Or send it by snail mail at this following address.
But you have to send, it has to be an actual snail. It
has to be a postcard. Postcard. Send postcards in. Like the old
taped school. To a snail. And you have to train it. I mean, let's just have it. Let's get down to it.
Let's get
train
down.
A snail. Tape the postcard to the snail shell. You don't want to overburden the snail.
And if you need help, guys, just www.trainasnail.com. You get all the instructions and video help there. DIY on the trail snail, guys.
Oh my God, that would be fantastic. So Ed, that wraps up this week's episode of When Doves Podcast. I think we know what we're talking about next time. What are we talking about?
This is what I'm fond of. This is called Artificial Age. So we'll be talking about that next time on the podcast.
Excellent. I'm looking forward to that discussion as well. So, folks, we hope everybody is good and enjoying autumn as it rolls in.
Yes.
Happy fall to y'all. See how I did that? A little rhyme there.
That was nice. Yeah.
It was nice. We look forward to hearing from you and talking to you soon. And until then,
may you
live to
see the
dawn.
Dawn. Bye, dawn.
I love you.
What's that flower you have on? Could it be a faded rose from days gone by? Did I hear you say he was you here today?
Yeah.
Take you to the castle in the sky.